Hey there, opera fans. I'm Eric Teague. My pronouns are he, him, his, and I'm primarily a costume designer. You may have seen some of my work in different houses around the U.S., but, fun fact, I'm also a trans man. Ever wondered how alternative identities thrive in the opera world? As someone who makes art for his living, I wanted to explore that question the best way I knew how, by talking to some folks. On this show, I'll speak with other artists who exist under the rainbow umbrella, and talk about life, work, and what makes us shine the brightest. So now I'm wearing a new hat, as your host for Come As You Are, the podcast that goes beyond the curtain with our industry's amazing artists from the LGBTQ+ community and our allies. Think of this as a virtual coffee hour with some fascinating people whose work you've heard or seen in your favorite shows. Whether singers, directors, technicians, or designers, the thing that we share in common is that we all defy the gender expectations often associated with our industry. So grab yourself a cup and join us for a good story. Today on our program, I have the joy of interviewing a groundbreaking star who has taken the opera world on her meteoric trajectory. You may have heard her sing across Europe and the United States and the rest of the world, honestly. But notably in her groundbreaking performance in the title role of Don Giovanni with the Tulsa Opera, and in starring in her documentary film, The Sound of Identity. The history-making, international, Heldenbaritonistin, Lucia Lucas. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm just a person. I'm just a person trying to make some art, that's all. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to sit down and have a chat with you. It's always a good time.
Party, party.
So thanks so much for joining us today. Here at Come As You Are, we like to introduce our identities and orientations up top. So, for example, I'm your friendly neighborhood trans man, and I use he, him pronouns. How about you?
I use she, her pronouns. Yeah, try not to make too much of a deal about it, but yeah, those are my preferred pronouns, so thank you when you use them.
Of course, pronouns are sacred. That's how I view it. Would you mind telling us a little bit about where and how you grew up?
Sure. I grew up in California, did all of my undergrad there even, at CSU Sacramento, and then eventually in 2005 I went to Chicago for my master's and my artist diploma before I went to Germany, which is where I've been for, well, since 2009. So a while.
When did you decide that music was your passion? Was this like from little baby Lucia toddling around singing, or did you ever have like a call?
I always loved music, and I wasn't sure how music was going to be in my life, but I knew that music was going to be in my life. And so I didn't do much choral singing when I was growing up, but I did play instruments. So all the way from fourth grade, actually through my undergrad, because I did an undergrad in French horn as well. It was just, it was a way for me to communicate, I think. And then eventually it wasn't until I was a junior in high school that I did the Pajama Game, which is a musical.
Yeah.
And I did choir the year after that. And then I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then when I got into undergrad, I was doing my horn degree, but was a little bit involved with choir. And then I had some friends in opera. So I asked the opera director, hey, this opera thing, like, is there a way I could get involved? And he just sort of like, I don't have any time. And then I saw him a week or two later, and I said, I really am interested. I've got some friends in there. And he's like, oh, okay, I have 5 minutes. And I went to his studio and sang for him a little bit. And he said, have you ever thought about studying privately? And I said, no, but sure. And so the opera director at my undergrad took me on as a vocal student. I just kept singing, and when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with this music degree, it became pretty clear that it was easier for me to develop singing than to work on my French horn stuff. Singing came very naturally to me, and I love playing French horn. It's a fantastic instrument. But singing just came really naturally, and I really started loving being on stage at that point. When I was like 13 or something like that, like it terrified me to be like third chair, third clarinet in an 80-piece orchestra. But eventually I just somehow became more and more confident and comfortable on stage. And I don't know, growing up, I think that I just wasn't a really good communicator, and being on stage so much, I developed those communication skills, and now I really enjoy talking, and even in like a public setting, and that doesn't bother me anymore. And of course, I don't have any stage fright anymore. And it's strange because I wasn't a good communicator when I was growing up. My parents are not from a musical background. It's kind of strange how I ended up in this. But I really do enjoy being on stage, and I really do enjoy the profession of being a professional musician, professional opera singer.
When talking about identity, and specifically a transgender identity, I like to say that there are at least 25 things more interesting about me to list before you hit on the fact that I'm trans.
Absolutely.
I wondered about your perspective on that, because you inhabit this very public figure of a transgender opera singer. And I wondered if that can become difficult to uphold that kind of pressure.
Well, I mean, I guess that's kind of a couple different things. I hope that being trans is not one of the most interesting things about me. I don't think about being trans. My wife doesn't think about me being trans. We did our taxes the other day. Me being trans didn't have anything to do with it. There's so many things in life where that doesn't have anything to do with anything. What's worth talking about being trans is that being trans, or not being trans, but the process of coming out is very front loaded, where, you know, there's a lot of things that you have to do at the beginning of coming out, you know, if you want to. There's of course there's a social aspect of coming out, which, you know, anybody who comes out for any reason is familiar with that aspect. And that's just like sharing something about yourself with somebody else. But in the case of being trans, there's also the legal aspect of it and the medical aspect of it. And, you know, all transitions are valid, or all identities are valid. But if you are doing all three of these things, it does take a long time. But most of the work is done up front, you know. You have to come out to a lot more people in the first week than you do, you know, a year later. Because people know. There are plenty of people who I didn't come out to because, you know, they just heard. There's a small section of friends and family that I told before I came out on social media. And then after you come out on social media, you know, that's sort of just people find out, and people are fine or they're not, but whatever, it's done. And, you know, doing these things, the beginning of it is front loaded, and that's difficult. But, you know, 5-10 years later, like, there's not much stuff to do in the way of coming out. And so then you just live your life. For trans people, or for anybody who's thinking about coming out, the coming out can't be like your end goal, because after you do whatever you want to do, like, you still have to live. So really the whole thing is about not necessarily being trans. And so, you know, I guess when people want to make a big deal about it in real life, I try and minimize it, because it's not a big thing. It's not a big deal. I think it's way more interesting that I grew up in California, you know, this beautiful place of California, two hours from the snow and 2 hours from the beach. And now I'm in Germany and, you know, left friends and family to go pursue a career in this art form. I think that that's way more interesting than the fact that I'm trans. Like, I didn't do anything to become trans. I just happened to be trans. Yeah, it's not a big part of my life now, basically, is what I'm saying. And in fact, even in my art, it's not a big part of my art. It's not a big part of my business. There's really... Yeah, it plays such a small part in my life that I don't think it is that interesting. And I hope that in the future, it's not that interesting for anybody. Because I would much rather have been growing up and being trans wasn't a big deal so that I could transition as soon as possible, you know? Because I think that if I was, you know, 5 or 6 years old now, I would be able to go online and show my parents and go, I don't know what this is, but this is me,
yeah.
You know? And growing up in the mid 80s when I was figuring out what was going on, it wasn't so easy. I had internet at a very young age, but the internet in 88 is not the internet that is now.
Right.
You know, there was no Instagram.
Right.
So, I mean, as far as me personally, and as far as my business, like being trans isn't a big deal. And in fact, when people try and make a big deal, I often say, when we're not talking about specialty projects such as one or something else, I just say, you know what? It's fine if you just like slap a beard on me and send me out on stage, because I don't want to make a big deal about it. And it's easier if I just perform my position as a baritone on stage and whatever that character is.
I love hearing your perspective, because I feel the same way. You want your art to be the thing that people pay attention to and the thing that is noteworthy about you.
Absolutely.
Desperately want my design to be the thing that is interesting about me, versus my trans status or things like that. However, I will say that being able to talk about these things helps with the visibility of things. Just like you said, being a six-year-old kid in somewhere, being able to see an example of a person that you could be that feels the same way is crucial. It's so important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we're experiencing kind of a renaissance of companies paying attention to different identities and different people.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful place to be in. Would you have any advice for companies who are trying to show more representation across the board?
Yeah. I mean, in general, I think that the last 2 years, our business has experienced at least 10 years of growth representation wise. And I think that a part of this is a problem. Let me first say that it is a problem, but I would say that it is a problem that is also sort of evolving and fixing itself in a way. Of course, I would give like little ideas and things to be careful of, but I would encourage young artists with varied identities to understand that these people who are older, who are about to retire, like right before or like within this sort of like 5-year span, I think a lot of them realized that they were going to have to relearn the business.
Mm.
That whatever business they left in 2019, whenever this is totally done, it's going to be a different business, probably involving more tech, probably involving more outdoor performances. It's just going to be different in general. So I think a lot of these people who are close to retirement age did in fact retire a little bit early if they could afford it.
Mm.
But the people who are replacing them are not 5 or 10 years younger. These people are like 20, 30, 40 years younger than the people who they are taking the position of. And these younger people are used to diversity, but it's not diversity to them. It's not a gimmick. It's just like people who they are surrounded with in their lives, growing up, in school, in their communities. They're used to more diversity just in their life as their normal life. So in that respect, they don't have a problem with hiring somebody who's not, you know, what they saw on stage 30 years ago at the beginning of their career, because the beginning of their career is now. You know, they're getting their position of power now, and and if it looks not diverse enough to them, they're gonna see it right in front of them, and they're gonna go, this isn't my community, this isn't how I live, this isn't representation of who I think should be on stage. And so we're seeing places just get more diverse automatically because we have these people who they want that on their stage just naturally. They don't have to try. They don't have to make initiatives about adding specific spots. It just happens. Now, if that work is not being done, if it's not being fixed, yeah, try and diversify your, you know, the people on stage, try and diversify your core, your orchestra, your administration. Yeah, absolutely. Develop these spots. And if you don't find the talent out there, curate your own talent. You know, find people who you can train. This is also something you can do. And if you're looking for a very, very specific, like, layered identity, like an intersection of a lot of different identities, put out a casting call for it. I'm like stage talent and stuff, put out a casting call, because you know, there might be multiple people who would be great for that. Sometimes people just think, oh, maybe this opportunity isn't for me. But if you specify, something and somebody comes across and they're like, wow, this looks perfect for me, you can bet that they're going to be pretty excited about this, and they're probably going to give a pretty good audition, and you're going to be really excited if you find them.
Totally. I would have felt the same way if I saw a design brief somewhere that wanted a bunch of intersectional identities together in one package to do some art that had that kind of lens to it. Right. Absolutely.
One thing that I was going to say is, coming from California and then going to Chicago, that was something that really sort of broke apart what my weekly life looked like. You know, the friends that I saw, the family that I saw, and then also going to Germany, that also broke things up more too. So if you are, you know, a young person, a young LGBT person or questioning or whatever, and you're not sure how this works with your current situation, one really great thing you can do is go away for school, because it sort of breaks up that structure of your life. You know, you don't have to go to the to your parents' house, you know, once a week for family dinner, or you know, maybe if you're into church, you know, maybe you get a new church and you can sort of reinvent yourself. You know, this I think that part of the thing for me is, the farther I got away from Sacramento, California, and the farther I got away from all of that structure that I had growing up that I was so comfortable in, the more I could explore me for me without the influence of others on my identity. And so going back to, you know, having like thinking, oh, well, you know, people don't want to see me do that thing, like they don't want to see me act, or they don't want to see, you know, my people of my identity on stage or something like that, the more you can break those sort of structure of your life, the more you can just explore you for you and what you want to do. So when I came out in Germany, you know, I had friends who I was colleagues with, you know, we sang on stage together. They said, well, what are you going to do now? Because they can't imagine, at the time, they couldn't imagine an identity that wasn't also part of the person you were playing, well, the character that you're playing on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so with me, I just went in such a completely opposite direction. Like, I'm going to be me, and then I'm going to play these super hyper-masculine characters on stage. Well, is that you? Well, no, that's not me. That's a character that I'm playing. You know, you don't have to have all of the characteristics of who you are playing on stage. And I think that one of the most common things is that people just sort of think that you have to play a character that is the same gender as you are on stage.
Mm.
And I would say that, you know, in opera, I don't know, I guess unfortunately in my case, but it's fine, is that you have this Fox system set up. So you need to find out what voice you can best sing in, what you can make your best sound in, and then just sort of go with that. And I sing baritone, I sing Heldon baritone, or like Verdi baritone, and that's what I do, and that sort of dictates the characters that I play.
Totally. And that kind of chameleon transformation is what fascinates me with the work, because it also butts right up against doing drag. So you're essentially doing a boy drag situation at work to portray these characters. And because most of them, let's be honest, are very swaggery, the hyper masculine, as you said.
Absolutely.
Like, you sing Votan,
yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah, yeah. You know, the thing is yeah, I've gone to the restaurant afterwards, you know, where there's my castmates, and then there's also sometimes the audience is also there, and they come out and say hi. And like, I can go do Votan, and then I can come off stage, and I can be hanging out, and the person can like go around the table and say hi to all the characters and stuff like that, and then they just sort of skip me. And then it comes out later, oh yeah, Lucia sings Votan. Oh, wow. Okay, great. No, 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 no. Like, people don't recognize me out of costume sometimes, or often, I guess. And you know what? That's also great. That's a great sign. Like, you didn't even know. Fantastic. Of course, it's nice to get recognition and whatever. But also, it's kind of cool that I'm convincing enough that, yeah, it can be so separate from my own personal identity.
When you're working on a character, where do you begin? Like, yes, of course, musically, you have to know everything. But also, when you're thinking about, like, the guts and the motivations of a character, where do you start?
Well, it helps to see possibly where the character came from. Because in opera, usually there's some sort of literature or some sort of art that you can look back to where the character comes from. Or historically, you know, you can look back at them. But specifically with opera, I do like to sort of do another pass through and go, okay, fine, I know all this extra information, but what is contained actually in the score? You know, something like Giovanni, you can pull from a lot of different art pieces and variations of Don Juan, but you also need to look at that libretto and see what is said inside of that. And you have to sort of go with that and not try and like meld a bunch of different things. You want to look at that structure and see not what you can do within that structure, but where sort of the coloring lines are, so that you can do as much as possible. You can fill in that as much as possible and not look at it as sort of a constraint thing. And then at the same time, I don't want to look at, you know, some other piece of artwork that also gives me like a smaller canvas to paint on. I want to have the maximum amount of space. So I'm just going to use usually the piano vocal score to start developing that, and the stage direction that's in there, and not necessarily the material that it comes from. I mean, I have an article about how to learn a role that I have on my website. It used to be on my blog, now it's on my website. And it says the actual steps of learning a role, which is speaking through the text 25 times, speaking in rhythm 25 times, and then singing it 25 times. And usually it's ready for staging at that point. Of course, that doesn't take into account doing the backstory and studying. And it's only when I feel like I need something explained that I'll go back to sort of the source material and look more into it. Something like the relationship, like if we're talking Don Giovanni, something like the relationship between Don Giovanni and Donna Elvira. Like that relationship clearly is special, and there needs to be some sort of background, whether it's actually from art or something that you have invented yourself, to give it extra shading. Because that is a very, very important relationship, and you have to have command over what that relationship was. Or something in the case of As One, like it's very helpful to go watch Prodigal Sons and know what Kimberly Reed has gone through and what she's chosen to share in various interviews or social media or whatever it is. It's really helpful to know, because something like As One, the verbiage is made to be more universal. But if you can go back to the specific situation, it will give more shading in the performance of it.
Most definitely. And especially in pieces that have a jumping off point in reality. And every great character is a full portrait in all kinds of shading and nuance, just as you said. As our listeners have heard, we're doing a production of As One at the Atlanta Opera, and you and I are working on it together. And that's, I find to be a really exciting thing. I'm very happy that the Atlanta Opera is doing the piece and that it has brought our work lives into the same orbit. Are you looking forward to doing the piece and working on the role? And is it something that you're excited about? Or is it, yes, it's another good job, but it's not necessarily something that is central to your being to play?
Well, you know, I've been a professional opera singer since 2009, and I haven't played a trans character yet on stage. So it's not necessarily core to my business, but it is nice that I get to play it, because I think I get to explore this work, you know, what's part of my life and what's not part of my life. And also being able to work with you on it is special as well, because I think that there are lots of things to talk about in sharing experiences, whether we do it on a podcast or whether we do it, you know, over coffee or dinner in Atlanta. I think that it's really great to work with an artist with a similar life experience. As for the piece, I think there's a sort of universalness of it. I think it's meant to appeal to people. People that are have moments of happiness in their life, people who are scared at one point in their life. I think that it's meant to take moments of the trans experience and tell people, hey, we experience these things. We experience being scared. We experience finding out about something, being excited about something. The library scene, you know, when, you know, I hate labels in general, but it is a great way when you can go, yes, this is sort of part of me. This is sort of part of me. And then you can find what you're looking for. But I think that all of these scenes are sort of universal scenes, whether it's about the trans experience or not. We're talking about trying to fill a role that somebody else has set out for you.
Yep.
I think that everybody can identify with that, you know? Mm-hmm. Your parents wanted you to be an engineer. And in my case, like back when I was in school, in music school, my dad was like, why can't you just be an engineer? And it's like, you know, that didn't have anything, that was way before I came out. It didn't have anything to do with that. But like, it was fulfilling an expectation of your family or of your friends or something like that. These are universal experiences. And I think that that's something that this particular project does really, really well, is talk about the universality of all of these experiences.
So we've had a pretty awesome conversation today, I must say. But to wrap things up, I like to keep things a little human. And so I want to ask, what kind of music are you listening to just for fun?
Like things I'm not working on, you mean? I've always loved electronica. And so a lot of different forms of that. So if I'm trying to relax, lo-fi, I love. It really makes me calm if I have to do some sort of brain intensive thing. That's kind of nice. If I'm off to an audition or something like that, I'll probably listen to some sort of Cardi B-esque playlist to sort of amp me up. So
get pumped.
Yeah. And like Riot Girl stuff as well. I guess that's less electronic stuff and more rock. I love chiptune.
Mm-hmm.
I love me some chiptune. Just because I love video games. I've always loved video games.
Awesome.
And classical chiptune is really fun too.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. I don't know. That's sort of what I listen to. I also like podcasts sometimes. That's it, I guess.
That's awesome. No, that's awesome. I think you really get to know a person by what's in their headphones, you know?
Yeah.
So that's cool. Are there any upcoming pieces that you'd like to tell us about?
I'm making my Met debut on March 2nd. Kind of excited about that. Yeah,
congratulations.
Thank you. Coming up pretty soon. Pretty excited about it. And then I do Giovanni in Canada, my Canadian debut. And then I do another string quartet opera in somewhere in Holland, I think. And then I'm in Atlanta.
Awesome.
Busy, busy, busy.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I really deeply appreciate you taking the time, because you are a super busy human, and it's an honor to talk to you.
My pleasure.
So thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah. And if you, our audience, would like to keep up with Lucia, you can check out her work, social media, and her film, The Sound of Identity, at lucialucas.com. You can also see my design work at my site, ericteaguedesign.com, and Opergeist on Etsy and Instagram. A huge thanks goes out to the team at the Atlanta Opera for making this podcast possible. And as always, y'all means all, so come as you are, and your spotlight is waiting. Bye, y'all.